Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
And as I did foretell you, we are tonight talking about the restaurant business. With whom? With Giancarlo Nardini, who is the co-owner and the operator of Club Lago. With Michael Taus, who is the chef, the patron, the owner, the manager, all those things, of his great restaurant, Zealous. And with Liz Van Leeuwen, who is, it says here, front of the house manager at Avec. Is there a back of the house manager as well?
That would be the chef.
That would be the chef.
Yes.
Of course. We're talking about the adventure, the joy, the pleasure, the problems of running restaurants. But it's a business. How is business?
Business is fabulous. We are very lucky.
Really?
Yes.
You're not feeling any loss of patronage by virtue of the hard times?
You know, I think it's hit with the companies. We do a lot of corporate dining. It's a big part of our business. So a lot of the companies, it wasn't PC for them to spend any money, not to enjoy themselves. So, mm-hmm. But I think in the past year, we've seen it coming back, you know, stronger and stronger every day. So we're very lucky. And you got to work a little harder. You got to care about the customer a little bit more for them to come back in.
Of the three restaurants represented here, I've dined in only one. And that is the one that Giancarlo Nardini runs, Club Lago. And I like that restaurant a good deal, as you must have understood by now, because
thank
I come
you. I appreciate
every so
thank
often.
You.
And I like it because the food is good. How important is the food? Rather than decor, fancy service, a very winning manager who chats up the guests, et cetera. It's more than just food that determines the popularity of a restaurant.
Well, right? And it's an unfortunate question because ultimately you're going to a restaurant for food, right? But
But are you?
The food is supremely important, and then it isn't. I mean, there certainly are many reasons. I'm sure we've all experienced going to places that are very well received, are incredibly popular. You eat. You pay your check.
And the food has been rather
blah. And then you walk out and you think, why did I just do that?
Exactly.
I will follow food as opposed to in places or I love – I don't want to knock my brothers and sisters in steakhouses, but Chicago is blessed with many great steakhouses. I have a core group of customers who will talk to me about the new steakhouse every time a new steakhouse opens. Well, I know exactly what – that menu is and what the sides are, and I probably could tell you what the pricing is without being there. I don't need to go to every new steakhouse.
I would imagine that steakhouse is rather easy to do in terms of cuisine, at least.
You know, I think so, but you know, to cook a steak at the right temperature is very difficult, I think, sometimes, but I'm all about the sides. When I go to the steakhouse, you know, uh-huh. I want that great cream spinach.
Cream spinach.
Yeah, you know, the double baked potato. Right. All that stuff. I love it. You know, and I love a ribeye with the bone in. There's no other steak for me.
So if you were going to a steakhouse tomorrow night, where would you go?
You know,
you can name names.
You know, I like Smith & Wolensky because I like all the sides there. It's a good steak. You know, it depends.
Kinsey Street Chop House, I think, is wonderful.
Gene and Georgetti's.
Gene and Georgetti's is great, yeah.
But if you like sides... Obviously, apart from going to a steakhouse, where you should be going is a good Korean restaurant.
Oh, the Panchan, baby. Oh, my God. Melt.
All those pickles.
That.
Some 30 little plates in front of you.
Well, it depends. if you're Korean, you get 30 plates. If you're not, you'll get 5 until you say, hey, can I get the Korean Panchan, please? Yeah. And then they'll bring the other ones. Korean food is my favorite ethnic non-Italian food.
We just talked about this the other day.
Yeah, we were just...
Have you ever come in for my kimchi, then?
I have had your kimchi.
You have
I have had your kimchi.
What?
People are amazed a white boy can make kimchi.
Well, it's cabbage and lots of pepper.
Yeah,
red pepper.
Ferment a little bit.
Fermentation.
It's fun. You know, I love Korean food, too.
Literally bury it. I have a good friend from sixth grade on who's Korean, and I remember my first experience with kimchi was we're in the basement playing Trivial Pursuit, and at some point somebody said, hey, go upstairs and get some pop. So I go up to the refrigerator, open the refrigerator, there's a thing of 7-Up, and then there are what look like to be jars of shrunken heads in the fridge, and I had no idea what this stuff was. And slowly but surely, I got into Korean food through his mom, who gave me her kimchi recipe, and I am so embarrassed to say that I lost it and never had the heart to ask her for it again.
I do like to come to your restaurant, as I've already attested. I like good Italian food, particularly rather simple Italian food. And that goes back to my own childhood. I was not raised by an Italian mother. But my good friend just down the street on 76th Street in Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, was Mario Salzano. And his mother was a great Italian cook.
Beautiful.
And she was totally, you know, of that ethnic source. She literally did not speak English, though she had been in the country maybe for 30 years. And pasta was in pasta and wonderful thing, meatballs and some of those things where you wrap stuff around other stuff.
What I love wrapping stuff around other, like bracciole.
Bracciole, yeah. And then we discovered pizza down the block at a bar, a Brooklyn bar, which also had a pizza oven. So that was the exotic cuisine, but it was so commonly indulged that it became almost my second cuisine.
Amen.
Yeah.
It keeps you coming in, Milt. Thank you.
Yeah, on the other side of our family, my mother's side were Italian. My grandmother was Sicilian, and my grandfather was from Lucca, like Giancarlo's family. And she taught herself in Northern Italian cooking. As a kid, I was very hyper. Nothing calmed me down.
So as
she
a
would
kid?
So she would make all this dough and all the stuff. And so it was kind of fun to roll and make all these different things. Yeah. She was way ahead of her time making like white pizzas before they were fashionable and all this great stuff. And, you know, like we love Brujol. Brujol is, to me, I judge an Italian restaurant by their meatballs and their Brujol. If those are great, everything is going to be good.
Ocobuso isn't bad either.
Mm-hmm.
What's your eating history, Liz?
Well, I am half Swedish and half Dutch, so we ate a lot of foods covered with white sauce growing up. Frozen peas thrown in there for color.
There we go.
A lot of fermented foods also in our repertoire.
You never had lutefisk, did you?
Unfortunately, yes, I have.
Not unfortunately. It's good.
I've been reading about lutefisk for many years, but I've never...
No, come on. Isn't it?
Well,
it's not good.
It is bathed
in... I love Scandi food.
It's bathed in dye for about a week, isn't it?
It is fish that is fermented in lye.
I said dye. Lye, rather. Which is
same thing. And it's quite slimy. It's an acquired taste.
It sounds
enough vodka, and you know,
doesn't need
good
acquisition. Well, it wouldn't be vodka. It would be
aquavit.
Exactly. We have reached the point where we pause for the first round of commercials. I hope there's a restaurant advertising, and then you can analyze the commercial and critique it. But probably that won't be the case. We will return almost instantly to Liz Van Leeuwen, Michael Taus, and Giancarlo Nadini after these words.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
The best things people say, according to an old adage, they say on the way home. A variant of that would be the best thing that talk show guests say, they say during the commercials. And Michael Taus just got off a very interesting one. You say that once you're in the restaurant business, you can't get out of it. Why?
I don't know. It's in your blood.
In other words, you really love it.
You know, very early on, my father's a frustrated chef. He's a very good cook. And he had a gourmet catering company as a hobby. So I used to help him. I was like 10, 11 years old, and we did this dinner at a church. And they used to have a chili and chicken buffet. And my dad did the special menu with like a chicken and puff pastry and béarnaise sauce and all the stuff. And I was helping him do it, and everybody at the end clapped. And I thought, this is a great thing. You get to do this thing, and people clap for you because I can't sing or dance. So it was pretty cool. But, you know, I like all the people. It's exciting. And there's few jobs for me that you can, you know, work all day, go to a table, and they smile at you. It's kind of like grandma. You know, your grandmother cooks all day to get that smile from the family. So all the hardship and hard things and, you know, managing people and one smile a night or somebody loving my food makes it all worthwhile that I'm stuck.
But let's talk about the downside, or at least the troublesome side, of running a restaurant. That is to say, what problems do you encounter? Quite apart from the question of whether the restaurant will succeed or will fail. I understand that when it comes to new restaurants, the average life of a restaurant is maybe 2 or 3 years before they collapse.
Yeah, they say 3 years. Yeah.
Well, and I mean that those numbers are, albeit terrifying, you have to take into account that that also includes every hot dog stand and diner. And I mean, it takes into anything that cooks food. But yeah, it's a horrible business.
But if you've got a successful restaurant, and all three of you are involved in very successful restaurants, have been there for some time, what are the difficult sides of the work?
I never, going into this, when my brother Guido and I started working full time with our father, Francesco, I I was dreading the hours more than anything else. And the hours are terrible. But I realized...
Almost as bad as doing a nighttime talk show.
10 to midnight, Milt. Congratulations, man. But what I realized very quickly is it's not the hours. It's the showtime. It's that for 14 hours you're on and you don't have an opportunity not to be on because nobody will want to be around you. So the exhausting hours are tough, sure. But what really gets to you, I think, emotionally and physically, is being on for that long of a stretch.
What does being on mean in that regard?
It means that people are watching, your staff is watching you, your guests are watching you, you're always on stage, your owners are watching you, in my case.
You're standing up.
You're standing up the entire time. You know, and a 14-hour day is not uncommon. And the whole entire time you have to be putting your best foot forward.
Now, here's an observation from a psychologist. That's me. I used to be a professor of psychology, as you may not know, though Giancarlo does know that.
Sorry.
And when I'm in restaurants, a phenomenon I'm very aware of is that the patron is very hopeful that the patron will come along and chat him up and show that he knows him and that he's sort of a friend. That is a universal phenomenon in restaurants the world over. What do you make of it?
You know, I'm very gabby, and that's because my dad's a salesman.
Mm-hmm.
He was a printer, and actually my dad used to go to Club Lago when I was a kid, you know, because there's a big printing area. But that's the thing, you know. A lot of my friends who are chefs are afraid to go to the table. They're afraid of criticism, because you do sometimes. You go over to the table and say, hey, how's it going? And they look at you with this blank look, or they criticize. But most of them love to talk to you. And some people,
they love to be seen talking to
you as
well.
Yes, you know, and it's fun. And
right,
also,
right.
I think one of the biggest things for myself that I've learned is if a good customer comes in and brings a guest, you got to treat them like a VIP. You know, you have to treat them special and send something out for free or whatever, because they're bringing you into their favorite restaurant, these guests, and you got to make sure that they're taken care of. I think it's very, very important for longevity of a restaurant to smooth people. And, you know, but truly, we're excited, because when somebody comes in, I had a customer who dined with me 850 times in 16 years.
Who counted that? How did you know that?
I tallied him, because he just came. He came every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks, and I've been seeing him for a little while, actually. And he made my whole day.
And you get to know them, and you get to know their families. And, you know, when you have regular guests that say they get pregnant, and then you see them, and then you don't see them for a little while, and then they come back, and they bring the baby in, and they say, oh, this is their first restaurant experience. We wanted it to be here
beautiful.
And nowhere else. And, you know, that's a special thing, and that's what makes it, for me, always a pleasure to work those hours and to be on, like Giancarlo said, all the time, every day.
There are difficulties when you're on and doing the job. For example, there is the fractious or otherwise annoying or sometimes even distressing guest. Getting drunkards are one category, but that's not the only category. I remember a restaurant meal I had, I won't say where, not at any of your places, only about half a year ago, and a man was abusing the woman who was with him, I mean, verbally abusing her, and then he actually got up and stalked out shouting, that was just, of course, it made everybody unhappy, though they were also looking on inevitably with sort of horrified fascination, but the owner of the place, who was there, kind of standing there looking and watching and listening, did nothing. I mean, this went on, the verbal abuse and the riotous, extreme flow of insult from the man to the woman who sat there withering, and the owner did nothing about it at all. It was probably a scene that ran for about 10 or 12 minutes before he finally got up and stalked out, screaming, shouting. How would you handle a thing like that?
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that.
Here, you take the floor on this one.
Something like that ever happened?
Go for it.
In your place.
Certainly there are times when the word babysitting comes to mind. Where
herding kittens.
Herding kittens is one thing, but babysitting is another thing, where you know there's somebody where it's either gotten to a point or you have seen them get to a point in the past where you're going to have to station yourself in front of them and guide them through the rest of the rest of their meal there. And if need be, you're going to have to politely ask them to leave. The worst of this is when it's somebody who comes in regularly, and you want for them to continue coming in regularly. But yeah, you stand right there. The fact that that owner, what you just described, did nothing to change that dynamic, that's a mistake. I mean, I'm not going to pretend to be an expert here, but somebody needed to go over to the table.
Once it starts to affect the experience the other guests are having, it's time to intervene.
Everybody in that rather small restaurant room was obviously watching, was tuned in. The guy was shouting at a very loud decibel level. And everybody was both fascinated and horrified.
You know, I think it's a very thin line, because the hard part is with the internet, this new world of social media, mm-hmm. that people could go on Yelp, like a website, and write a review. And you don't know if that person you're going to yell at is going to go write this review that you can never get off the internet. So it's this... You know, 10 years ago, I handled things differently than I do now. Now I have to think about the repercussion of them writing something on the internet that this person I'm going to yell at, like, you know, because you have to think about that now. I want people to have a great time. And, you know, sometimes you have to, we were saying, fire a customer, but you can't fire a customer anymore because you don't know how they're going to retaliate. So you have to kind of have, you know, they call it kick gloves now. You have to be careful. And how you handle that. Because I've had to tell somebody to leave before, and it's a hard thing. You don't know how they're going to handle it. And you want everybody in the regular dining room, the regular guests who are behaving, to enjoy themselves.
This is so interesting to me, because only this very afternoon, preparing for this program, I went on the internet looking for your restaurants. And I found for Avec, which I looked at particularly, many people very complimentary and enjoying themselves tremendously, and particularly... commending what you do in a rather special way there, namely the seating arrangement. You put people who don't know each other at the same rather long table, I gather.
Yes, we do.
But I found one or two such Yelp-like comments complaining about that and saying it was so constraining I couldn't even raise my fork without bumping the guy next to me whom I did not know. But you've lived with that, and this remains a very popular restaurant, as far as I know.
It's when I train new hostesses, it's interesting to train them in the aspect of part of seating the dining room at Avec is sometimes you have to make guests who are sitting on the outside edge of the table stand up to let other guests in.
Much as when you're entering a theater.
Yes, exactly. And that can get pretty awkward for people, especially people who have never dined there before. We have certain ways to try to make it as comfortable for everyone as possible. But in essence, you are sitting with people that you don't know. I can also say that many friendships, many marriages, many business relationships are formed there.
Actual marriages?
Yes.
You've got a record of that?
We do.
That's wonderful.
So it works out, you know, most of the time.
There was a place years ago in Boston, a famous place, but I can't remember its name, where all the dining was in that form.
I don't know.
No. Well, like we were saying, it's very European. It's fun.
Yeah. You know,
like I was saying earlier, I love it because I love talking to people. My wife sometimes feels I should have dinner with her and not the whole table. But but that's just – I'm just but like my father. But, you know, it's fun. You know, like in effect, the food is awesome, and you end up talking to the person next to you, and then you start sharing food. You start sharing wine, and it becomes a big party. You know, and it's quite fun. Yeah. It's like you're at this, you know, fun play and everything's going on. It's pretty cool.
When I was a little boy growing up in Brooklyn, my father, who loved to dine out, would often take us to a place called Luchow's. Do you know that name at all? It was a very famous sort of middle European kind of Viennese restaurant right on 14th Street. And all the waiters were 60 or 70 years old, and they all had the garb of a European waiter. That is, that long, a black jacket of some kind, and a long apron running from above the waist virtually down to the floor. And they were always inconspicuous. You felt you were in good hands, but they didn't force themselves upon you. They were just flitting in and out, doing their work very well. I often think of them when I go to a restaurant where some 20-year-old kid, comes over, leans forward in a rather conspiratorial or in a rather too intimate way and says, I'm Philip. I'll be your waiter.
Right.
I'll be taking care of you tonight.
Or I'll be taking care of you, yeah. And I just don't want that at all. What do you do about training your waiters to proper waiterly comportment? That's the question in the air as we pause for an update on the evening's news from Paula Cooper.
Milt Rosenberg and Extension 720 on 720 WGN.
And so we return to Michael Tuss, who is chef and owner and manager at Zealous, Liz Van Leeuwen, who is one of the managers at AVEC, and Giancarlo Nadini, who is owner and general manager, I would guess one would say, or patron, I do like that word.
I'll go for it.
Who he and his brother own and run Club Lago. Is Guido, your brother, as active at the place as you are?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
The two of you
are. We are both there the same amount of time. Yes, absolutely.
But not doing a brother act. When one is there, the other is usually away.
Usually. Fridays and Saturdays, you'll see both of us.
Some of the times they'll double team it.
Well, they have a great act. They have a great act.
Right, do a little soft shoe.
It's a very convivial place, I agree. Now, I was raising the question before about waiters. I am put off by the young guy. Not only does he lean over and say, hi, I'm Philippe, rather than Philip, and I'll be your waiter, he sometimes also gets on his knees. You know that routine? So he's on a level with you while you're sitting
there? Oh, when they sit down next to you?
Yeah. Well, they get on their knees and then lean forward so that you're head-to-head, which is absolutely it's an invasion of space in every way. But what do you do to train a waiter to handle it properly?
You know, I think that's one thing. You know, being in the fine dining restaurants my whole life, I feel the thing is we want to give them exceptional service, but yeah, we want it to be fun, you know, and we have a waiter that works for us. Andrew is one of the best waiters I've ever seen in my life. He's exceptional because he's like a chameleon. At one table, he's super articulate. He's talking about the world and all the stuff and wine, and he's very proper. And then he goes to another table that the people are younger and they're more fun, and he's telling jokes, and he just knows how to, you know, look at the table and judge them in a sense that to make their, you know, their time at the restaurant enjoyable. And I think that's very, very important.
So there is no regular mode of comportment that you ask your waiters to perform with all customers.
You know,
you want them to vary so that they will please the customer.
They should be able to gauge the table when you reach a certain level of professionalism. You follow the cue that the guest gives you.
Well, what would those cues be? How would you know this is a group or a couple with whom I want to be reserved and distant? Here's one with whom I want to chat up and have fun with.
You can tell by the way that they're acting with each other, the other people in their party. You can tell by the way that they even enter the restaurant.
Enter? How so?
Their engagement with the host or their non-engagement with the host. The way that they are when they're seated, if they look at you or if they look at each other.
Right, eye contact can be huge.
Eye contact is a big deal. Just the way that they ask questions about the menu. You can tell if it's a business dinner, they don't want to be bothered. You can tell if they're new to the city or tourists, they want to ask you questions. They want to ask you where they should go later to see blues or jazz,
my goodness.
Where they should go drink later. You know, there's always cues that a table gives you. And then from there, you can follow their lead and be what they want you to be.
The matter of eye contact is particularly interesting to me. There is a wonderful tombstone for a waiter. I forget where I first encountered this, but it's just right. For the waiter who's died and has now been buried, the thing on his tombstone says, "By and by, God caught his eye." Which makes reference to the fact that so often you're sitting there trying to catch the eye of the waiter to get him over to the table. Just tonight, I dined with Madame at the tapas place near here. What's it? Emilio's Tapas.
Yes.
You know
Emilio's.
Yeah.
Oh, right, right.
Yeah. And it was a nice waiter. I think he was actually a Spanish guy, though he could have been Mexican. But it was time to leave, and I couldn't really catch his eye, but he was passing by not too far away, and so I said, "Hola," which I've never actually used before, but that got it.
It's better than garçon.
Yeah, no, hola. Yeah,
there's nothing worse than people snap their fingers at us.
Quite quickly gave me the check and so on. But the management of waiters from the guest's point of view is also a problem, I would say.
Well, and I've noticed it was something that, besides what Michael and Liz were saying, but at Club Lago, seen how a group will look at other groups around them, I think can be a good sign. When you see people easily turned off by anybody who has gotten even the slightest bit loud, well, all right, we're going to deal with this group differently. They might need to be sort of eased into what is a usually pretty relaxed atmosphere at our restaurant. Interaction with other guests. People complain about children. This is a pet peeve of mine, I suppose.
But it's the hardest thing, because if somebody's spending the money to get a babysitter and coming to my restaurant, they don't want any crying kids. And the hardest thing is when I have to walk up to someone who does have a small child, mm-hmm. and the kid's crying or something, and say, please, could you go outside or whatever, and they get mad at you. But I don't know. I just think it's a fine line. You're trying to make everybody happy.
But if you want to eat in a restaurant where all the children are well behaved, it's very simple to arrange that. Just go to France.
Right.
Don't you agree?
Yes. Right. I had a wonderful experience once for lunch that these little kids came over to me. I was having lunch by myself.
Yeah.
And they wanted to speak English with me and practice.
Yeah.
And they're like 6 or 8, and they're the cutest little kids, and they're asking me what I liked and talking about foie gras. Awesome kids. It was very fun.
Well, ironically, I think that as my brother and I have had children in the last 7 years, take your children out to eat, people.
I agree.
New parents out there, take your children out to eat at a young age. Get them to know what it
means. Bring them in there early.
To eat at a restaurant.
Have them in a dining room. I
agree. Yeah, have and get to. I mean, and tell them you can't run. You're at a restaurant. Tell them you can't. You know, they'll learn. It's we all learned how to dine out at some point, and it's better if you learn when you're 2 than if you learn when you're 18.
When restaurant people get together, do they have a code to describe different kinds of customers? Is there a typology?
Absolutely not, Milt.
No, I don't
absolutely
know what you're talking
not.
About.
There's, of course there is.
See that's why Giancarlo and Guido come down to Zelsa at the bar, have a drink, and then, oh, my God, you won't believe what happened to me today. And I do the same with Club Lanka. Yeah. You have to vent a little bit. I think all professions have that.
What are the 3 or 4 major classifications of customers, just in terms of behavior?
Wow, this is not easy.
Only 3 or 4. We're supposed to narrow it down to
3 or 4.
I think knowing I think when you have, and this unfortunately, like I was saying before, when you have regulars who are not always good to the staff, those are
abusive.
That's bad.
I'm not going to say abusive necessarily, but
impolite.
Who can be mean?
Yeah.
It's tough. It's tough, and you want their regular customers. You want them to continue coming in, but you know that you're going to catch heat for this once they leave. Because everybody on your staff is going to bring them up. Mm. And I think...
And they don't want to wait on them.
And they don't want... Right. Yeah. Everybody's staying away from the table.
No, nobody wants a short straw.
Knowing your customer base, I think, is something that helps with that.
What do you do about the opposite? The customer is so garrulous and so interested in maintaining and enhancing a relationship with the waiter that he or she can't stop talking to the waiter.
You know, it's tough because I actually had a server that... didn't work out because he would just get focused on one table and forget about everybody else. Uh-huh. And so it's sometimes you have to, look around the room while you're talking to these people to make sure everything else is going around. And sometimes you have to excuse yourself and say, I love talking to you, but,
I have
a job where I got to work.
Sometimes you do get involved with one guest and, you'll be having a nice conversation. And meanwhile, the world is collapsing around your ears and this person won't let you go. And at a certain point, you just have to say, excuse me, I have a...
Or get bailed out by
another staff member.
We're
really good at sensing that. Someone will come in and bail you out.
And just say anything effectively. Hey, they need you in the kitchen. That's the easiest one.
See, my staff will come by and touch me on my back. Because they know I talk too much sometimes.
No, Michael. Yeah, actually, Milt, when you said having a customer who is overly garrulous, and I was going to say, have you met Michael Taus from Zealous? Because he's a talker. talkers are wonderful. It's just, I think more, right, having somebody else on the staff come up and allow them to disengage.
Usually that's the floor manager's job.
Yes, like Liz Van Leeuwen of Avec.
How did you master that job, master those tasks? Or did it come naturally because it's consistent with your inner character?
Well, I used to sell cars, and so rescuing people from awkward situations on the car lot as a used car manager is probably second nature for me. It's just, you know, you get to know your staff, and you get to know when they need you, and that could be one of the things that they need you for, is to bail them out of an overly talkative guest.
By the way, this is totally out of left field, but somehow you're talking about that just brought it to my mind. I've heard it asserted by some people, by one particular restaurateur that I know, but I won't otherwise identify him, that he, who said, without the Mexicans, we would all have to close down, saying essentially that wait staff and kitchen staff are more Mexican than any other.
We wouldn't have a restaurant industry in Chicago without Mexicans.
You agree with that?
I don't think absolutely.
Oh, and Guatemalans and Ecuadorians and
Wherever the
Eastern European
stereotype of the lazy Mexican came from, I don't understand because I've never met one.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, our staff, our kitchen and my floor manager and my busboys are all Mexican, and they're wonderful. We're lucky.
Is that true?
We're lucky to work with
them. Here?
I only have one.
Well, it's yours.
And when he's not washing dishes at our restaurant, he's drinking a Club Lago. And we love him to death. He used to be an educator in Mexico, and now he's working for us. And
he's your only Mexican.
Yeah, he works very hard, and he's an exceptional person. And I think that's the thing. They have so much pride, and they work so hard. And I think it's and I think it's part of one of the businesses they fell into, and works out very well.
And at Avec, what's the situation?
My Latino staff is the core.
Is the core. 20 years ago, that would not have been the case. I don't know who did the work then.
No, I think it was 20 years. I mean, I worked in the business for 28 years, and it's always been that way.
Has it?
Except for New York, it's a little scary because the Haitians, and when I was a cook and I would bring a dish there, I'd make sure it was clean or a pot because I didn't want them killing me.
Jesus.
Rough, and they're hard workers too. But they have just different ways. And that's the thing, learning different ways to communicate with people.
And part of what has changed, I think, as far as the usage of that labor goes, is that our industry relies primarily on, not necessarily our restaurants, but our industry as a whole, on the 16 to maybe 25-year-old demographic.
Uh-huh.
And that is shrinking in America and growing in Latin America and Mexico and South America.
So those gentlemen waiters that I encountered when I was a little boy at Lucha's in New York, and it was a famous restaurant at that time, they in their 50s to 60s, even to 70s, you don't get that anymore in the restaurant business, do you?
I don't know.
Career waiters.
It's certainly right.
You definitely get career.
You do still get it?
Yeah, they just aren't dressed that way.
Yeah, they're just...
I'm not talking about their dress. I'm talking about their commitment to that occupational role.
No, but I think there's still a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. I work with a lot of career servers. Mm-hmm.
They like that lifestyle because they get to, their hours are very flexible. They have days off, be off during the day and, do other things in their life.
In a good restaurant in Chicago, how much can a wait person make?
A lot of money.
A lot.
Like what? I want numbers.
Oh, that's you guys. Go for it.
I think somebody can make, between, 45,000 and 180,000.
180,000 at the top.
In certain restaurants.
For a wait person.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. It's an amazing skill to have.
But that hangs on the tips, the generous tips.
Yeah, but, and I think that's that's the thing with, they have vast wine knowledge, liquor, all this stuff, how to serve. And also, they're amazing because they can teach other staff members. It's always a learning process in our business.
I've got a task for you. Again, I'm setting this just before we stop for some commercials. You all dine out a good deal, I'm sure. And you all have your own conception of what a good restaurant feels like and looks like. I want you to tell me one or two restaurants in Chicago, not mentioning, excluding the restaurants of your other two colleagues here in this conversation. Give me one or two restaurants in Chicago that you think represent the sort of thing that a good restaurant ought to be. And I want real names and real places.
Okay.
We'll be right back to Giancarlo Nadini, Michael Tuss, Liz Van Leeuwen after this.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
So, I want to dine at the two restaurants that I've not yet been to, of the three that are at the table, namely Zealous and Avec. But what other restaurants would you recommend? Because you enjoy going there and you think they do it well. Liz.
At the top of mind, I have a Thai place up north that I really love, Aroy Thai, 4654 North Damon. The owner is fantastic. The food is incredible. And the service is, I would say, impeccable. They don't make you feel out of place for being there. Always very welcoming, very, very true hospitality. In the same vein, I love Lachette's Inn on Irving Park and Damon.
What is that?
It's a German place, a little rowdy, really small, excellent, excellent schnitzel, great beer. Uh-huh. And the owner is working the floor all the time. He's amazing and
say
just always
name,
a real,
say the
real
name
welcome.
Again.
Lachette's, L-A-S-C-H-E-T-T-S.
Uh-huh.
Great place.
Sounds good.
I'm getting hungry now. What are we going
right,
to do?
Right. Exactly.
Michael talked.
You know, I don't know. My wife would laugh because I love Emperor's Choice in Chinatown.
Emperor's Choice.
I love it. It's been there forever. I love Chinese food. And like after I get done from work, I get in the car, I call on the phone, I say, this is Michael Taus. I'm coming to pick up some food. I don't even give my order. They just know it. I drive up in front, they get the bag, and I go home and get carry out. I just love it. I love Egg Foo Young. Everything's really good there. It's one of my favorites. But, you know, maybe I'm biased, but, you know, I love Charlie Trotter's. I worked there when I was
you worked there for a while,
when I was very young, and yeah. I think it's one of our greatest restaurants in probably the country or the world. And,
definitely.
You know, but I think it's just, to me, when I go there, maybe it's amazing, but they make you feel at home, and they really care about the whole experience. You know, and you know, I think I've watched some young couples there who are on a date or something, and they treat them the same as everybody else and want to take them on the journey. I think it's very interesting.
He or they opened a food shop.
Charlie Trotter
ago.
To Go. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Charlie Trotter to Go.
On
yeah.
Fullerton.
I've been in there once or twice. Uh-huh. It's an interesting idea. And Giancarlo.
I think it's fun, just as an aside, that restaurant people love talking about other restaurants.
Sure.
And I notice even at Club Lago that people will often come in and ask me, well, what Italian places do you go to other than your own place?
Mm-hmm.
Expecting me to say that I don't go to any other Italian places. I'll give people a list of Italian places that I like. The more that restaurant people recommend other restaurants, the better it is for everybody, I think. And along those lines, in the Heart of Italy neighborhood, there's a place called Bruna's that's a wonderful, been there forever.
Yeah, we all go there. We love it.
It's a great
place. Heart of Italy,
that's that
where.
Stretch between 18th and 24th, more or less, just off of Western. So it's on, what's the street just east of Western? What
Oakland, is it?
Oakland, thank you. Or Oakley.
Oakley.
And there's a string of some five or six Italian restaurants.
Yes, that have been there for a long time, and it's not much of an Italian neighborhood anymore, but was for a long time, and I think was often overlooked, especially on the north side, because Little Italy was big, and then there were Italian restaurants dotted all over the city. But it's a really cool, vibrant, three-block stretch of good Italian restaurants, one of which Bruna's I bring up. But Vicinato is there, and there's two other, Fontanella, Ignaz, and I think I'm missing one, so I'm sorry if I'm making somebody upset. But there are wonderful spots there. And
out of the Italian category, what else do you favor?
Topo Gigio in Old Town is wonderful.
It's one of my earliest restaurant memories that somebody, one of the servers dropped a plate of pasta on my sister's head there when she was 8 years old.
I'm sorry.
No, I love it. They were very apologetic.
It's still Italian, though.
Yes. Oh, yeah, and it's
that's
good.
All he eats, just Italian.
Hey, check out the Italian guy in the corner. Orso's in Old Town I also like. Another place that's been around forever. Bocca della Verità in Lincoln Square is a great. And actually, that was when you brought up first restaurant experience. Our son, Dario, his first restaurant was La Bocca when he was 3 weeks old, maybe.
You see, this guy's really stuck on Italian food. I asked him twice. And beyond Italian.
Oh, did you
else?
Say beyond Italian?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. I thought you said continue.
He's
on
like
Italian.
Pronouncing him.
Yeah. Sorry. It makes me feel good. But we were talking about Thai food before the show because, Milt, I didn't realize you were such a big Thai fan. But
I'm a fan for all cuisines, as a matter of fact.
And we're lucky to be in a great restaurant city. I mean, that's something that... another thing that I think all restaurateurs should talk about all the time. This is a spectacular restaurant
city.
Go pick, get on the L, get off at some stop and pick a place. Opart Thai is what I was thinking of, just south of Lawrence on Western Avenue. They're wonderful. Oh, and they opened another location in the South Loop a couple of years ago. But there's a stretch there on Western that has numerous great Thai restaurants close to the one that Liz mentioned. But I've been going to Thai Room for years, and it's this wonderful family-owned little...
Where's that?
That's on Western, just north of Irving, on the west side of the street.
Yeah, I know the place. As a matter of fact, when this radio station was at the old location...
Oh, yeah, which was right there.
It was
right there.
Close by. We used to go there on occasion.
Yeah. Great food there.
Yeah.
We are 2 minutes away, a minute and a half away from stopping for a news break, and then we will be going on to the phones. Therefore, I think it is time to invite telephone calls. For anything you want to ask or say about restaurants and how they're managed and how what kinds of human situations inevitably occur and reoccur, or for that matter, anything you want to ask, because you've got here three guests who, taken together, obviously know everything there is to know, probably 15% more than everything
there is. There's something new every day.
So we're now opening the phone lines. The number, 312-591-7200. 312-591-7200. And for our internet listeners elsewhere in the country, elsewhere in the world, I'd love to hear from some of you about restaurant practice and restaurant culture from far away, whether it's in Yellowknife, Saskatchewan, or Mérida in the Yucatan, or for that matter, in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia. And if you're up very early in Europe, by all means, in Paris, do give us a call. Has anyone in Paris been lately to L'Auberge dans le Bourgeois, one of the world's great restaurants, but not as well known as many of the others that people prattle on about? 312-591-7200, and for email, extension 720 at WGNradio.com. Extension 720 as one word at WGNradio.com. We're ready for your contributions. We'll get to you right after the update on the evening's news from Paula Cooper.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
A quick reintroduction of our guests, and we'll go directly to the phones and to the email. And for email, as I said before, I'd love to hear from people from far away and about the restaurant culture in your town, whether it is Minneapolis or San Jose, or whether it is Sydney, Australia, or what have you. My guest, Giancarlo Nardini, is the co-owner and operator of Club Lago here in Chicago. You know, we should give the locations instantly.
Beautiful.
Club Lago is on Orleans.
331 West Superior Street. It's Superior in Orleans.
Exactly. Michael Taus is the chef and owner and restaurateur generally at Zealous, and that is located at?
419 West Superior.
Mm-hmm. And Liz Van Leeuwen is the front of the house manager at Avec.
615 West Randolph, and Jefferson in the West Loop.
So that's that stretch of Randolph, which is a restaurant row.
Exactly.
Yeah. And 312-591-7200 is where you reach us by phone. For email, extension 720 at WGNradio.com. First up is Jonathan. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Dr. Rosenberg and company. How are you all doing?
Just fine, sir. Go ahead.
Okay. I wanted to comment on that recent story about that woman who was fired from Outback for, she was a waiter and she was fired. The story involved, she was wearing a political bracelet and, the employer, now their claim was that she was fired because she was inattentive to customers, which that's fine. But my take on the story was, and I'd love to hear comments from, you know, from the rest of the company is, my feeling on the issue is, from what I read in the story, she was employed by Outback for 4 years. And so, you know, at least my experience with working with coworkers is if they're going to be inattentive to people and give bad service, it's going to be one of two things. They're going to do it from day one, or if they're being inattentive on a certain day and, it, you know, it's long down their employment tenure, it's probably because something major happened, which is
but the one thing you left
her.
Out of the story, even if it was a fake and cover story, you say on her part that it was because of some political thing she was wearing. Political in what direction? What view or political philosophy or candidate did it favor?
Oh, well, it was a very, and it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't like a swastika or anything, so it wasn't like out there.
What
and,
was
know,
it like?
Overly.
What was it?
It was a, it was a tea party bracelet. It was just a little bracelet. And she had two customers that, you know, they started asking some initial vague questions. Hey, what is this? What is this? And then they
You know, it's
more
a fascinating story, but in a way it seems too complex to be handled in the short space we have available here. But surely, if it was a Tea Party bracelet and she thinks she was fired for wearing that, my heart goes out to her, since I think the Tea Party is a great organization and will do some significant work in helping to save or at least save America or at least turn it back on the proper path. Ha.
that's unfair. It's your show, Milt.
Because you all disagree with me, right?
Oh,
it's
no,
your
we
show,
no,
Milt.
591-7200, the number 312, then 591-7200. And next up is Sid. Good evening.
Good evening, Milt. How are you doing?
Just fine.
Fine. Thank you for taking my call. I just have a quick question for your guests. We're currently running a hotel in the south side of Chicago, which has an empty kitchen. And I just wanted to get your experts' opinions on, you know, it's an empty kitchen. There's a lot of guests at the hotel. What would be the, you know, the best way to staff that kitchen with a young chef who wants to do it, where it won't cost them anything to buy equipment or anything? It's a kitchen that's ready to go.
You are the owner of the hotel, are you?
Yeah, I sure am.
But you've got no prior restaurant experience?
I've got absolutely none. I used to own a very small motel in California. I bought this place about in 2005. So and business has ramped up. We've changed our business model. We have about 100 truckers that come there every day. And so they're in there 24 hours a day, and I'd like to open up some kind of diner, but I have absolutely zero. Yeah.
Well, that's a very interesting question. Very useful, in fact. What is your advice to somebody who wants to open a restaurant but has never had any experience in that realm?
Well, ask the truckers what they want. That's your customer base, then that's where you need to go, I think. They'll tell you.
You guys could give me insight on, you know, staffing and stuff like that.
Well, finding, first of all, we have, hey, can you turn your radio down, man? I think we're getting feedback. That's all right, dude. The cooking schools in the city are great resources for staffing, and they love to get calls like yours. CHIC, the Chicago Hospitality Institute, which is in River North, it's exactly what they're doing. They are training people not just how to cook, but how to run businesses,
kitchens.
How to run kitchens, how to run food businesses. And you know, I hate to say Craigslist, but you certainly are going to get a lot of responses. It will blow your mind once you put out some sort of ad for staff how many people you're going to get in a week. You're going to get hundreds. But try Schick. Try them right away, man. They are in this business exactly to help somebody out in your situation.
And Michael, tell us, what do you have to add?
You know, I think the thing is, you have to find somebody with a track record who's done this before, because you have to worry about food costs, all different costs, labor.
He should not undertake to manage his own restaurant.
No, I mean, find somebody you could, or do a partnership with someone you like their restaurant who does something like, you know, Wishbone or something.
Or a good consultant.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely somebody who's done it before, so you don't lose any money.
Yeah, well, I mean, I actually did lose a lot of money, and I know nothing about restaurants, so I finally gave it up. So that's why I was like, is it a good idea just to even give it to somebody and say, hey, just run this restaurant?
No, you have to say, run this restaurant and make a significant profit.
Yeah, I don't need the profit. I make my money.
Oh, really?
The rooms.
Okay. So then the restaurant is just an add-on.
Yeah, yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. You could definitely give it over. I mean, that's very common in the hotel business, is to have someone else run it for you.
And, sir, with that, we thank you for the call and all best wishes.
Good luck.
Good luck.
That's right. Amen.
Bon chance, indeed. And we shall return to other curious listeners and callers and emailers as well right after we pause for this.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
There are great stories from restaurants. That is, a restaurant as a scene can be the base for what is intended as a comic story. Do you know the one about the backstage delicatessen in New York?
And no.
The old waiter comes up to these three showbiz guys who have just come in. And the first one says, "I'll have a glass of tea, Max." The second one says, "For me also, Max, a glass of tea." And the third one says, "Also, Max, I'll have a glass of tea. It should be in a clean glass." And half an hour passes, and the waiter comes back with the three glasses of tea and says, "Which one was the clean glass?" It's a very simple story.
Yep.
Can you match that?
I don't know. I don't think I'm ready for it. Actually, one thing I will say about it is that my brother and I, and really my brother was is a much bigger stickler about this than I am. I'm amazed at how frequently I get dirty glasses at restaurants. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
And at hotels, you know, at hotel bars where you're paying $20 a drink and you'll get a schmutz on the thing and it just bugs the cock out of me, man. I'm sorry. It's a little thing perhaps, but, oh, man, come on.
Polish the glass.
Did you ever read George Orwell's book, Down and Out in Paris and London?
I've read bits and pieces of it.
You've read his account of working in a Parisian restaurant.
In a Parisian restaurant.
And it's pretty horrifying.
We serve food, you know. All right, no, everything is wonderful in restaurants, Milt. Everything is perfect.
See, I don't know. We have lots of rules. I have too many rules, sometimes my staff says.
We go back to the phones, 312-591-7200. Mike is next up. Good evening, sir. You're on the air.
Good evening. Thanks for taking my call.
My
radio's off, and I put the Italian beef sandwich down.
Oh, do you have jardiniere on there?
Hot jardiniere.
Hey, all righty.
You got me hungry listening to this.
I'm
working, and I just needed something to notch on.
All right. Where's that Italian beef from?
The patio.
All right. Those are nice people.
Yeah. My question is, a lot of magazines around Chicago, like Time Out Chicago and Chicago Magazine, every so often will do stories on dive bars. Now, my question is about dive restaurants. One of my favorites in the South Loop was Jimmy Wong's.
And he has Lawns over on, right off of North Avenue now.
North and what?
Right by the Dominic's there, like between North and Division. It's like in that. Is that in I think it's in Larrabee.
Okay.
I've known him for 100 years.
Okay, because I wanted to ask you what places would be comparable to that, but you say on Larrabee Lawns.
Yeah, but it's kind of a nice place. I like a good joint.
Oh, absolutely! Blue Frog in River North. I go there all the time.
Yeah, I gotta give them a shout out.
I mean, and it's a bar. They do karaoke. They have games. And then they have food, and their food is spectacular. It's always good. People, I think, it's the kind of place sometimes where they'll look at it and think, oh, maybe they'll have fries and a burger, which they do, and they're great fries and they're great burgers. And their sandwiches, their soups are wonderful. It's a great old-school place that is a joint and does good food, Blue Frog.
I get a lot of my husband points there because my wife loves to go there and sing. So I've sat there through some many songs. The food's pretty damn good.
Sir, we thank you for the call, and we move on quickly. So many other callers are waiting. And next we go to Dwayne. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. I was just wondering about the 15% gratuity tax that are tip that's automatically added to the bill on a 7 or more party. And I was just wondering if that was right, or why is it that the restaurants do it, and I will hang up and listen to your conversation.
All right, sir. We thank you very much for the call. It's a useful question indeed. And I think Liz has a line on that.
15%. Generally, at this point, it's 18% for parties of 6 or more. And really what it comes down to is a lot of times for a bigger group, people are buzzed. They forget to tip.
Well,
And you can always add over and above, and it's always printed on the menu. It's disclosed that that's what we're going to do. I think when I go out to dinner in a large group, it makes it easier for us not to hash over the gratuity.
I think it's the dividing of the check, really. Because I can understand where people are going to be upset about that. But, yeah, you get a group of 10, and all of a sudden everybody's pulling out wads of cash or pulling out 10 different credit cards. It is an attempt to make things easier for the customers so that they don't have to think about what the gratuity is. It's set up for them ahead of time.
We've got a friend, a listener to this program, in Sydney, Australia. And every so often he emails in. And he rose to my invitation, and he has just sent the following. President Obama dined with us yesterday. Here's the menu. Starter, macadamia and thyme, encrusted lamb cannon, whatever that is, served with avocado cream quenelle, blood orange segments, and herb salad. Main course, pan-fried Jewfish with Jewfish?
I don't know what that is.
I don't either.
I'm interested.
They must call it something else in this country.
Right, absolutely.
Pan-fried Jewfish with seared prawn mousse, crushed Kipfler potato, and saffron cream reduction. Dessert, wattle seed and passion fruit pavlova roulade with fresh raspberries. Half of this stuff I don't even recognize. They use a different terminology in Australia, obviously. Paired with a 2011 Sauvignon Blanc Semillon and 2009 Hollick Cabernet Sauvignon from Margaret River. And it's Mike in Sydney, as he usually signs it. And he says, P.S., I agree with your Tea Party sentiment. He's addressing me. Mike tends to be one of those equally unmovable conservatives, just like me.
Hey, man, Sydney and...
my producer tells me right now, Jewfish is monkfish.
Oh, thank you.
Did you get that by consulting the internet?
Jewish monks we know out there, there must be
a caller has just called in to say, from Australia to say the Jewfish is monkfish.
Sydney and Auckland or New Zealand,
Mike.
There was
I see.
I was amazed by the food there. There's been an explosion in the last 15 years or so, where they're using all sorts of cool bizarre for us ingredients and indigenous stuff from Australia and New Zealand. And the creativity was explosive. I was there in 2001 and I was dreading thinking that I was just going to eat lamb the whole time I was there, especially in New Zealand. It was an incredible combination of things. You really got a sense that everybody in the restaurant business was excited because they were finally playing with stuff. Uh-huh. It was wonderful.
Here's an interesting email from a listener who says, this is a very enjoyable program. I agree with him on that. And then says, of all the jobs that I have had, it's not a him, it's a her, being a waitress was by far the best one I ever had. I never worked at a fine dining restaurant like your guests are from, but patron contact is generally the same for all. If I could tell anyone going to try serving, common sense is by far the best asset to have. The restaurant business is not just about food. It is about the people that serve it, and if you do it well, and I mean very well, even a grilled cheese can be extraordinary. Well, there's an enthusiast.
Beautiful.
And we will go back to the phones, 312-591-7200. And next up is Zoe, I gather. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Milt. I'm a big fan of your show. How are you?
I'm well, and all the better now that you've told me that you love us. Go ahead.
So this is actually a question for all three of you. I recently read the book Kitchen Confidential by Anthony Bourdain, and in it he wrote about tasting his first oyster as a child and how much he loved it and how that experience really kind of kindled his love of food. And I'm just wondering if the three of you had a similar experience, and if so, what was the food?
Good question.
You know, it's interesting with that book because I love Anthony. I love his show. But, that was the best part of the whole book because I thought the whole book was going to be a little bit more positive, but he got a little crazy at the end.
But you disagree because we talked about this before the program began. You disagree with his advice that a good time to not go to a restaurant is Monday night.
Yeah,
they're using leftover food.
Yeah, but we're saying earlier that, we buy stuff every day from local people and, everything. We try to keep as fresh as we can. And if you're out of something in a restaurant, it's a good thing.
So oysters were his first great taste thrill. In that, he differs from Woody Allen, as he may in a few other regards as well. But Woody Allen says, I will not eat oysters. I want my food dead, not sick, not wounded, dead.
Well, I remember as a child, and we ate plenty of Italian. I'm Italian. Nardini is the last name. We ate plenty of Italian food growing up. We ate all sorts of food, but plenty of Italian food.
Apparently, that's all you eat.
Yes, and that's the only restaurants I ever go to. But I remember my father cooking zucchini flowers. You just sort of dump them in an egg wash, a little bit of flour, and then fry them and sprinkle a little lemon on it, and you're done. As a child, you're basically, your parents are telling you to eat flowers, and you think they're crazy. And then you have your first one, and there's this crunch to it, and the lemon mixes with the crunch, and the color is really cool. And it turned very quickly. We could never have enough of them. We would eat them all in 10 minutes. And one time that we had leftovers, we left them in the dish for our cat. And I thought my parents were crazy because why is a cat going to eat fried zucchini flowers? And 5 minutes later, we're all sitting at the dinner table, and we could hear from the kitchen this little and that cat was going to town on these zucchini flowers. So let Bourdain do his oysters. I'm voting for fried zucchini flowers.
And Michael talks.
You know, I don't know. I have a lot of them. But, you know, my father, we love going out to eat, so in different ethnic places. So when I was a kid, we went to Greektown, Rodetus. And we were there, and I liked all different kinds of things. And I said to him, I want to order this octopus. I had to be like 7 or 8 years old. And,
fantastic.
And the waiter looked at me like I was crazy. So the octopus comes and it's red wine sauce. And it was just cooked just great. His texture and his and to this day, it's one of my favorite things in the world. And like everybody was shocked that this kid was eating this. But, yeah, it's all about food experiences and, you know, and being adventurous.
I've never been able to bring myself to taste octopus.
Oh, it's
or
the
eel
so
or
good.
Any of those.
Oh,
it's eel's good, too, man.
I just haven't got there. We thank the caller. We pause for an update on the news. And for that, too, the WGN Newsroom and Paula Cooper.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
If you've been trying to reach us and hitting the busy signal, try again right now. We've got one or two lines available, and the first two people to call will get through. 312-591-7200. And here's a quick email that I want to read to you. This refers back to, I think, our conversation about lutefisk. And this listener says, one good thing about lutefisk is that without it, there would have been no need to invent Glog.
Oh,
that is a good thing.
Oh, God. And Glog, have you ever gone to Simon's? One of my favorite bars in the city,
boy.
Simon's in Andersonville. And they make a Glog right around this time that is heavenly.
What's in it, actually?
Well, it's a mulled wine, right? I mean, I've never made it. It's so you cook various different spices, cloves, cinnamon, that sort of thing, and with the wine, I think.
It's a box wine, I think.
I don't believe the wine itself is the most important element.
I like it.
Oh, yeah. House of Glunz makes a great glug.
I think they put orange peel, cinnamon, cloves.
Coriander. Yeah.
And you can buy at Glunz, you can buy their bottles of glug and just heat them up. I brought it one time actually for a Seder, I think, and just warmed it up in a small pot on the cooktop. It was perfect.
Back to the phones. 312-591-7200, and Jim has joined us. Good evening.
Good evening. Interesting show as usual. I've got a question about Italian POWs in Montana. Someone said that that's the best restaurants for Italian in America, and that's the reason why. And I wonder if any of your guests could collaborate that theory.
Sounds like urban folklore. But
I've been to Montana many times, but I don't recall ever eating Italian food anywhere. In Montana.
Wait, and I'll be the slow one. There's a restaurant called Italian POWs, or
no.
There were Italian POWs?
Italian POWs in Montana during World War II.
Who stayed over and started some restaurants.
And then started restaurants. Wow, that's fabulous.
I want to go there.
So do I, man. Now I want to hit up like Bismarck for Italian. I mean, certainly the introduction of Italian food, or at least Italian food being as popular as it is now in the States, World War II had a lot to do with that. And not just from POWs, but also from GIs returning who had gotten to sample Italian food for the first time ever in Italy. And then that wave of immigration just pre-World War II and post, where they had GIs who were waiting for Italian food.
And, yes, sir, go ahead.
I don't know if I had someone in the back of my limo once, and he swore that the best Italian restaurant he ever had was in Montana.
Did he tell you the name of it?
That was why. no, I don't have a good for good memory for names.
You know, I think I can testify to having eaten in something that passed for an Italian restaurant in Montana. Thank you, sir, for the call. I once did a lecture at the University of Montana in Missoula, and my hosts took me to a local restaurant which had an Italian name and was sort of quasi-Italian. It surely was not the best Italian restaurant I've ever been to.
Was it called Olive Garden?
No. This was before Olive Garden.
That's on the outskirts of Missoula, not in the downtown.
Hey, I'm definitely intrigued. I want to hit up Missoula and Bismarck now and see what I can do, man.
We go back to the phones. 312-591-7200. You are next on the air. Good evening.
Hello, guys. Hey, great show tonight. Hey, so my question comes with, I know you guys all run great restaurants, and I'm sure a lot of people come in on first dates, second dates. They're coming there for romance. But what do you do, and what do you advise your staff to do if, by no fault of the restaurant, the date is just a total train wreck? I mean, you guys, I know you want it to be very romantic and that you want the couple to have a great time, but sometimes the couple just shouldn't be a couple. So how do you deal with it? How do you advise your servers and your staff?
That is a great question. Excellent. Gentlemen and Liz.
I think we give them the number for Match.com.
Well, go, Liz.
We deal with it as gracefully as possible. I've seen people burst into tears. I've seen people storm out without paying their check. Every breakup in every dining room is going to be different. So there's no one set way to deal with it.
What about the absolute opposite? What about you people who are so infatuated with each other and everything is going so well that they start embracing, and can't be stopped and get stronger and stronger in the bodily expression of their affection?
How much money,
we laugh at them.
I think it depends how much money they're spending.
Right.
At some point you want
to. If they have a really expensive bottle of wine, I think I could tolerate. No, I'm just kidding. But it's awkward. You don't want to embarrass them.
Does that happen?
Yeah, you don't want to embarrass them. They're already embarrassed.
Yes, I've been embarrassed a couple of times. I've walked up to a table and I just don't know what to do. I have to leave.
I have actually sat with people. So now this isn't in the overly amorous. This is in the bad date thing. But I've sat with people after one of the two people has left and just held hands. Really, you know, just, here you go. You know, it's going to work out. This is going to be okay. All right. That's the psychiatry part of the business, I think, that comes into play far more frequently than you would think.
Because I think we're human, and we had a girl that got stood up once at our restaurant.
Oh, that's one of the
worst. And our staff embraced her, and we bought her a couple of drinks, and we felt terrible. And I think that's just the thing of being just a good person, and in our business, and that girl actually came back with a bunch of girlfriends, and enjoyed it again.
Nice job.
Another email for you, with our thanks to that last caller. And again, room available on the board now for more calls, 312-591-7200. But here's the email. I am a longtime listener and a 30-year restaurant employee. I am a general manager at a restaurant in LaGrange. I want to know from your guests what has been their worst moment in their careers. That's a good one.
Well, let me start with repeating Bismarck several times, which is not in Montana. Sorry about that.
I was wondering about that.
No, I screwed that up.
You're talking about Bozeman.
I thought that was a code word for something.
No, I'm sorry. I messed that up. I'm sorry. God, worst experience.
Do you know where it is, in fact?
It's in North Dakota.
Correct.
Hey, I got that. All right. Second time's the charm. Worst experience. Well, we had a chimney.
You had a fire.
Collapse onto our restaurant. The building next door, their boiler exploded, and it caused their chimney to pop and fall onto our restaurant. We were closed for 6.5 months. So Club Lago had never been closed before since 1952, closed for 6.5 months in 2009. I think it is safe to say that that was Club Lago's worst moment of its career.
It was a lot of moments. 6.5 months.
Six and a half months worth of moments. Yep.
How did you spend the time?
Well, everybody kept saying, or they would call or stop by or after we opened and said, well, so did you and Guido just go to Italy and you should have just taken off? And we were there every day. Guido and I were at Club Lago every day dealing with contractors, mm-hmm. dealing with the city, dealing with insurance people, and at the same time reassuring our customers who would come by that this wasn't our fault and that we were going to reopen. So Guido and I worked an awful lot during that 6.5 months. There was the only way that we were able to enjoy that is we went out to lunch every day, pretty much. So we got to enjoy River North's restaurants far more than we normally would have.
Liz, your worst time?
To be honest with you, I don't think I've had it yet. I'm pretty sure it's still on the horizon for me.
Good girl.
And Michael?
I don't know. Sometimes I've had some bad days. You lose a star, it's a big thing, you know. And
yeah.
Or it's just like somebody write something bad on one of the websites and it's hurtful. And I think, you know, every day you have to wake up and...
There was that famous chef, I forget his name, in Paris, who lost one Michelin star, went from 4 to 3 stars and committed suicide.
Right, yeah. Right.
Who was that?
I don't remember, but they actually
ended up using... I want to say Bernard Point, but I think I'm wrong. I can't fully remember the name.
No, you mean Fernand Point.
Sure.
It's spelled point. It's pronounced point. Fernand. He was a great for a while, long ago. He was considered the greatest chef in France. His place was not in Paris. It's at a little town called Vienne. I dined there once.
Yeah, he drank a magnum of champagne every day. They said.
It's a good way to be.
Maybe so. Maybe so. But it was a great place. Very famous in its time. Near Lyon, not far from Lyon.
Well, and they used the movie Ratatouille, which is a wonderful, wonderful animated Pixar movie. But the beginning of it, they deal with a restaurateur who died. I don't think he killed himself, but he died of a heart attack because he had a star taken away.
Uh huh.
But you know, I mean, but it makes you strive for excellence every day, and you just gotta, you know, brush it off, like my wife says. And you know, we got a star back a couple of years ago, and
you know, this brings us to a related topic. What's your philosophy? What's your strategy with regard to restaurant critics when they come to dine?
Well, they're usually anonymous. So
I know they
hard.
Try to be anonymous, but don't you?
No, it's hard to. I mean,
you don't spot them.
I think it's hard. You know, sometimes you don't know. But if you do know, actually, one of the critics asked me in an email, "Do you think it's better for me to be anonymous or not?" But if I do know, it makes me more nervous. Then I'd rather just like be able to be cool and just do my thing.
Usually somebody on staff recognizes them. When you know the Michelin Guide is in town, for instance, you try to get a hold of photographs of people that may or may not work for the guide.
Oh,
and
you do recon.
Hang them downstairs on the staff bulletin board area.
Really? Excellent.
Big arrows pointing towards them. But it's, you know, you treat everybody equally.
We are about to pause for a last round of commercials and then directly back to the phones and to the email. For phones, again, 1 to 2 lines available, 312-591-7200. And there is no limit on the amount of email we can process, though we can't read it all on the air. But the email address, extension 720 at WGNradio.com.
Extension 720 with Milt Rosenberg on 720 WGN.
Do you just eat and enjoy themselves?
Another quick email. This one says, the French chef that committed suicide, it was asked on the show, his name was Bernard Loiseau.
Yeah.
Bernard the Bird.
Bernard the Bird. Yeah. Bernie Bird.
What a sad thing.
Yeah,
oh, terrifying.
Of course it is, yeah. 312-591-7200. And we go next to Christian on WGN Radio. Good evening.
Hi, Mel. It's Christina.
It's Christina.
Okay.
I misread it. Just say Christina.
All right. You've got a great show. I love the restaurant shows. I want to know how the owners handle a situation when celebrities come in. Say, a Michael Jordan, an Oprah, someone from California that's shooting a film here. And I'm sure they expect to be comped. But I would just like to know how they handle that.
Michael Jordan would expect to be comped when he's worth probably close to $1 billion?
Right. But they're all very cheap like that. So I'd like to know how you're...
That's an excellent question. Let's do a go around the table on that.
Actually, Michael Jordan's ex-wife lives down the block from Zellis. So we see them quite often, like probably talking about the kids, and you know, he's the best. He's so generous. They want you to do well. They don't want to be comped.
He's dined in your restaurant.
Yeah, I think big stars don't want need to be comped.
Little I would think not.
Little yeah. ones do. Oh, Jersey Shore or something. Yeah. But, you know, I think the thing is I've changed, you know, because some come in, you don't want to Twitter it because you don't want to, you want them to come back in or bother them because they're having their alone time. But sometimes you, you know, you want some of the little PR and stuff. We had Dana Patrick. We just had Dana Patrick in, and that was pretty cool.
I love this show. And thank you so much.
We thank you, ma'am, for the call.
Okay, bye.
And quickly to another time, being very short now, 312-591-7200, and Mark is next up. You are on the air, sir. Good evening.
Good evening, Milt. Just a question to your panel. I know everybody is trying to do something new, but are there any chefs or restaurants in the area that are doing something old, such as recipes from, say, the late 19th or early 20th century?
Well, there was Next. When Next Restaurant opened, they did the Escoffier menu from 1906. Exact replication, well, as close as they could come. I mean, you always have your classic French restaurants. I think a lot of Thai restaurants do very, very traditional Thai cuisine. I think really everything in a restaurant is pretty much just a spin on the old stuff, right?
Yeah.
Well, but I like that when people will pay attention to what, unfortunately, you know, we didn't get a lot of cookbooks necessarily 100 or 200 or 300 years ago. But every once in a while you'll hear about, like, going back to the best records I think we have in the U.S. for early on were presidential dinners, I think, or dinners that were given at the White House that were written down when other things weren't. And I've always been fascinated by somebody trying to recreate that. I think you'll hear about it every once in a while. I swear recently I read something.
There was one that was supposed to be a Roman Epicurean dinner, and due to last-minute inability to get songbirds or something that were supposed to be used as an integral part of the menu, they had to cancel it.
Is there a classic French restaurant in Chicago?
Le Nomad.
Le Nomad. Yeah. And, of course, I know that place, and I've been there a few times. As I was telling you when we were off the air earlier tonight, when Margaret Thatcher appeared on this program, she came with a large entourage, and the word from them was they needed to have a dinner before the program at the radio station. And we did contact Mary Beth Lucioni, and she provided the dinner. I didn't tell you this, though. It was rather lavish and wonderfully well done. But and the three people from Scotland Yard and the two cops who were accompanying her and two or three other staff people, they all tucked right in and enjoyed the dinner mightily. Margaret Thatcher said, well, I'll just have a cup of consommé.
Did Margaret tip her appropriately?
I don't know. But she only had the consommé and nothing else. Mm-hmm. Our thanks to the caller, and quickly to another on 312-591-7200. Ryan is next. Good evening.
Good evening.
Yes, sir.
Hi. I'm Ryan LaRoche. I'm the executive chef at the Park Heights Chicago.
Hello.
All right.
Welcome, man.
Thank you very much. We of course, just went through the Michelin rating the past week, and we were fortunate enough last year under the old Nomi to get a Michelin star, and obviously for myself it was a milestone in my career. But I don't know if you know, but we went through a reconcept
renovation
of the restaurant renovation, and this year we didn't end up getting it, and you know, it's such a mystery as to what the criteria for it is, because you know, I mean, there's plenty of reasons why you can say why we didn't get one this year, but at the end of the day, you know, we were closed for 6 months, and you know, the outcome was not good for us. But you know, there's always next year.
There is.
Yeah.
Yes, hang in there by all means.
Yeah, and, no, it's you know, our
and don't do what Chef Loiseau did.
Yeah, Bernard Loiseau. Yeah, absolutely not. You know, we're really excited about this year, and we opened, and we had 3 months to get Michelin in and to check our restaurant out, because they closed their books in August, and we opened in June. So,
hey, here's an interesting thing. I've just got this as an email. It relates to what we're just talking about. restaurant rating. A critic told the French chef, and this is with reference to Monsieur Loiseau, a critic told the French chef, it looks like you're going to lose a star, which was opinion at that moment, not fact. The chef killed himself, but did not lose his star.
Yeah, he lost points. He didn't actually lose the star, that's correct.
This fellow says, if you chase stars, you've lost focus. Interesting.
Yeah, it's really about the time and place of the restaurant in the city, you know. I mean, it's Michelin is so new, and we've been around for 10 years, you know. So, and we got a great reputation with the city, and the city really rallies behind the restaurants that it likes. So,
And certainly, I mean, for Michelin, I mean, this is like, there's also that element of them coming to the hinterlands finally. And,
right.
Here we are in Chicago. Oh,
let's
look, they eat
stars.
In Chicago. That's adorable.
they are definitely
how
the new game in town.
Well, thank you, sir. Interesting call.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ryan.
Okay.
Cheers,
right,
brother.
Bye.
You all know this fellow. What's the
don't know him.
What's the restaurant he said he works?
Nomi. Park Hyatt.
Which is what?
The Park Hyatt Hotel.
Chicago, just east of Michigan.
You know, we've talked with the three of you, but I've only made clear with regard to Giancarlo that the cuisine is Italian. We haven't really said what the cuisine is at Avec and at Zeller's.
We're contemporary American, have a classical French background, but we do a lot of global influences like Asian, Indian, a lot of vegetarian.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever I feel like.
But is it somewhat on the eclectic side?
Though? Yeah, definitely.
And at Avec?
Spanish, French, Italian, Portuguese, I guess you could say Mediterranean.
It begins to sound Mediterranean, indeed. One last question or one last caller coming up. Tim has joined us. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Thank you for your show. I appreciate listening to it. Wondering, sir, for your panel, since the change in the economy over the last several years, some of the steps that they've taken to remain profitable, and when they may see things turning around for the industry as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I mean, you know, it's just watching your food costs, your labor. I was up on the roof yesterday fixing something, you know, doing it myself. But I think it's just being hands-on. I'm there every day, and I think that's the thing. And you have to keep marketing. And, you know, I feel that the past year and a half, people are starting to do more corporate events, and I feel very optimistic about the future.
Like you said, Mark, watching your costs, hands-on ownership is very important. Any way that you can save money, you have to do it. And also, like you just stated, events are coming back. We're having buyouts again. People are spending money on the corporate cards that they weren't spending a couple years ago. So I do see a little bit of a rebound.
Well, on social media, certainly, looking for free ways to get your name out there. And Facebook and Twitter being the two prominent ones, but certainly finding ways to get your name out there without spending money.
You know, social media is such an interesting thing. My wife's very techie. She's amazing at doing all that stuff and always teaching me. But, you know, Twitter and Facebook, I mean, you have to do it. You have to embrace it.
We are about to close down for the evening. And I'm very much in your debt. I've enjoyed this tremendously. Let's make very clear not only who our guests have been, but where their restaurants are. Club Lago, run by Giancarlo Nadini and his brother, is at
Superior in Orleans in River North.
And Avec, AVEC, partly run by Liz Van Leeuwen.
615 West Randolph, that's Randolph between Jefferson and Des Plaines in the West Loop.
And Zealous
is a block away from Club Lago, 419 West Superior.
And it got the name Zealous because you're so zealous.
One of my letters of reference, Charlie Trotter wrote my almost religious zealousness towards my cooking. I thought it was a good word.
It is indeed.